A1, number 8A.
I was just giving a short review of the trend in medical science and began to tell you how since the beginning of this century a great change has taken place in the concept of medical science. When they began to see that physics proved the unsubstantiality of matter, they naturally had to change their concept of man too, because up to that point they regarded man as material. But as physics told them that matter is not what they believed it would be, naturally medical science had to look out for a new explication of man and of the functions and of the body. So, first, they began to realize that they really could classify disease in two categories. The one category, the first one, was that they would see that there are so-called psychological diseases, diseases caused by a psychological state of mind. But they would say at the beginning of this development that such diseases would have no result on the body itself. They call the body very often somatic, bodily or somatic, you see. So they say, yes, there are diseases which have a psychological cause, but without a somatic change on the body. So that they would just disturb the functions of the body, but not change, really, the body itself or the organs themselves. Then, next to this class, they could see that there are still organic diseases caused, really, by somatic changes. But as time went on, and as they began to see more and more about the psychological causes of disease, a new line was taken which is called the psychosomatic medicine. The psychosomatic medicine gave up this distinction between these two categories of diseases, and they begin to realize lately that really all diseases have a psychological cause, that no disease has a cause outside, so to say, of a psychological state of mind. They even say that accidents have a psychological cause, and many people, they are taxed as accident-prone. That is, they have a mentality which always leads them somehow into an accident. But it is very seldom that a man in his lifetime has but one accident. That usually they have many accidents, if they have accidents at all. They make the following reasoning. They say, what is really the difference between an animal and a mortal? Because looked at from the biological point of view, from the physiological point of view, an animal really has the same body, so to say, as a human being. Has heart and lungs and livers and eyes and so on. And there is really no great difference insofar as the somatic part of man is considered. So they have a common physiological basis, but the distinction between an animal and a mortal, they say, is consciousness. That an animal acts according to instincts, whereas a human being really has a consciousness, can think, can reason things out and can worry and can be angry and so on and so on. So, as they found out also that human beings are more sick than animals, that human beings fall sick much more often and much more severely and usually have a much longer duration of disease than an animal, they conclude, therefore, that it is consciousness which produces disease. So, moral consciousness, they say, make men sick. And so arrive at the statement that the body really is not sick, but that man is sick. See, that's something very different than the point of view medical science has taken last century. They say it's no more true what people said when they said, I became sick, or I got sick. They say it's much more true to say, I made myself sick. So you see, they put really the stress on consciousness. Now, Mrs. Eddy, nearly a century ago, at the time when these concepts were still foreign in medical science, already wrote, human mind produces what is termed organic disease as certainly as it produces hysteria. See, she could see already in the last century that the cause of organic disease as well as functional disease as well as mental diseases are always produced by the human mind, by mortal consciousness. So medical science today really says we know now quite a lot about the body, but we know very little yet about man, and which is very true, because when we go to school we learn quite a lot about the body, but nobody tells us what man is. We have no subject in our schools which says what is man, but we are instructed in biology and in physiology and all that. So they realized that man must first get well before the body can get well too. So you see, in this case of medical science, how important it is to accept the findings of natural science and naturally the revelations of great spiritual seers, which show that there is no material, objective reality, but all that there is a state of consciousness, and that what has to be investigated is really the state of consciousness. And so what I will do now for quite a while is that we want to investigate what is a state of consciousness. And the first great subject I want to discuss is what is mortal consciousness. I will first start with mortal consciousness. As we have always to deal with consciousness, we should be aware what mortal consciousness is. So let me analyze this. And in order to analyze it, I want to bring out 7 points. I just stated in 7 points so as to get some order in our thinking. The first point about this mortal consciousness is that we see that mortal mind, which is always based on beliefs, is really the basis of mortal consciousness. That it is that mortal mind really makes up, so to say, the form and content of mortal consciousness. But what is this mortal mind? What makes up this mortal consciousness? Well, there is a lot that makes up a mortal consciousness, and there is a whole omnium gatherum, really, of human beliefs that make up such a mortal consciousness. For instance, mortal thinking, human thoughts, human opinions, or human concepts are one of these causes, or the elements of mortal consciousness. Then our mortal consciousness is really formed a lot by traditional beliefs. Beliefs which we have just taken over without thinking and have made them our own, without asking how right they are and how good they are. Education is another element that forms our mortal consciousness. According to how we are educated, so we think and feel and act. Or our moral codes form our mortal consciousness. And you know how those moral codes change from one country to the other, from one age to the other, from one generation to the other. And they form and mold mortal consciousness. Then naturally, the five physical senses are another element of this mortal consciousness. You know how Mrs. Eddy says, mortal mind sees what it believes, as certainly as it believes what it sees. It feels, hears, and sees its own thought. So we can see how the five physical senses just make up a lot of our beliefs. Then, a lot of our whole moral attitude and moral consciousness is formed by common sense, by human theories, human dogmas, also by sentiments, and so on. You can see we could go on, and begin to realize that mortal consciousness is formed and molded by much more than just by thinking, by mortal thought, but that there is a whole omnium gatherum, really, of mortal beliefs that form this mortal consciousness. Then we come to point two. After we have seen what really creates or forms and molds mortal consciousness, we come to point two, where we begin to realize that mortal consciousness is the cause of all these harmonies. We must begin to realize that the cause of disharmony is never a thing or a person or a place, but always our mortal consciousness. It is the state of mind which produces the phenomena. And if our state of mind is a mortal consciousness, it can produce nothing else but disharmonious conditions. The medical people have recently investigated more and more the old sayings which people have about their body. And they call it the organ language. And have found in that organ language really a explication of many, many of the diseases with which they have to deal. You see, they found out that if somebody is in a condition where he inwardly always thinks or says, I can no longer stomach this situation, that very soon he may find himself to have stomach trouble. Or that if somebody is in a situation where he just over and over says to himself or thinks to himself, I just get sick of it now, that doesn't take very long, and he feels very sick. Or We meet that in the practice very often, that people are in a situation where they would like to run away, where they just feel, oh, if I could only run away from it. And suddenly they find that they can't run anymore as they used to run. that they may have arthritis or any other disease in the legs and just can't run away again. If you have that so often in the practice. Or you have a life situation which is disagreeable and well, somebody says, I just can't swallow it anymore, and they find themselves of having throat troubles, trouble in swallowing what they should swallow. Or you say about somebody who is not very happy, who has a very unhappy disposition, and that he's bitter as gall. Whatever he does and says, he's just as bitter as gall, and very soon you find him to have gallstones or anything to do with gall. And so you have quite a few of these incidents where you can see how the language we use is sometimes very indicative for the disharmonious conditions we reap from such a mortal state of consciousness. Now, it's true, naturally, that this organ language, which the psychosomatic medical people have investigated recently very closely, that we don't have to see therein really an irresistible law of causality. It isn't so that if you are in a position where you just feel, oh, I get sick of it, that one has to get sick of it. It is only showing that if a state of consciousness which goes on over a certain period or at a certain pressure, that may really affect the body in the way as we think. So we mustn't make a law of causality that a certain sickness, say, has always the same cause. That wouldn't be right. Because you know very well, for instance, that if two people get frightened, the one perhaps gets pale and the other perhaps gets the jitter in his knees. So they react differently on the same cause. So it would be wrong to lay down a law or a rule. And I say that because many Christian scientists, Christian science practitioners make that fault, that error, that they think that the heart disease always has the same cause, or that stomach trouble always will have the same mental cause, which isn't true. But all what I wanted to say is to see that the mental state of consciousness, which is disharmonious, brings about a disharmonious somatic condition. It mirrors itself forth in the body. One of the professors we have in Hamburg at the university clinic in Hamburg, and who is very well known as a exponent of this psychosomatic medicine, Professor Joris, he goes even so far as to define sickness as falling out of divine order. He said a man gets sick if he falls out of the divine order. Or he would say a man gets sick if he is not true against himself. See, if he is untrue against himself. And so pointing out really that a disharmonious consciousness is the cause of disease. Mrs. Eddy has said that in the 70 years ago, she said, the erring human mind is inharmonious in itself. From it arises the inharmonious body. What these people say today, Mrs. Eddy has seen long, 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 long ago, through revelation and divine reasoning. And so we could see how we should rely much more really on divine reasoning, even if it's not in accordance with natural science. So this professor also says that really medicine today has prevented people from dying, but it has not made them whole or healthy. It just has made them lifelong invalids, greater invalids. By the way, the other day I heard a lecture in the radio, and this lecturer said that he had a friend at Harvard University in America who is a professor of medicine. And this professor of medicine had to give a talk in New York on a certain subject. And he said in that talk, "You know what happened to me? I was trying to find out what sickness is. All my lifetime I was treating sickness, and I suddenly asked myself, what is sickness? And so he said, I was looking up all the dictionaries to get the definition of sickness, and all what the dictionaries say is that disease is impaired health. So when he was looking up what then is health, they just said that health is freedom from disease. So he said, here we are in the world, a whole faculty of medicine and trying to heal disease, and we don't know what disease is, and we don't know what health is. We try to heal disease in order to establish health, and we neither know what disease is nor what health is. See, and that's true. That's true. They don't know. And it is only an understanding of what man is as the image and likeness of God that gives us the definition what health is, and therefore what disease is. So we can see that we live in a wonderful century where we just seem to get closer and closer to the truth, to the real truth, to those questions which really matter, and that we are not just living somehow on the surface of things. This Professor Joris, for instance, would write in some of his books about the causes of disease, showing how mortal consciousness in all its phases really can be the cause of disease. He says, a man becomes ill when, for instance, his inner conflicts remain unsolved. See how he brings it back to a mortal consciousness. And I just want to show a few of these causes which bring about disease, even from the point of view of medical science. Naturally, these things we know since Mrs. Eddy's discovery. He says, a man, the cause of disease really can be when we try to avoid a clear solution of a conflict. If we have not the courage really to solve an inner conflict and just put it aside, and that continually putting aside the solution makes one sick. Or, he says, the cause of disease can be an abnormal condition in our youth, or a false or tense relationship with our father or with our mother. See, there are all mental, psychological causes. He says the cause of disease can be an inner disorder, an inner untruth, just when one lives against one's truth. Or if we continually act against our conscience, we live against our conscience. Or even if we have a false sense of piety and of pity, or a false purpose of life. He says the cause of disease can be a sense of guilt or suppressed desires or fear, hate, revenge. Also, he says, say the hunger for success and prestige may be the cause of disease. The lust of making a big career is very often the cause of disease. Also, hiding one's feeling because one knows that it's just not done. If something is just not done, and yet you would like to do it, and therefore you have constantly to hide and suppress your feelings. That is usually also the cause of a disease. Or a false concept of sin, self-accusation, and so on. He says, very often it is a discontentment with the present state of civilization. You know how often when people get older they say, oh, it's no more nice to live on this world. And they are disgusted about the world of today. And that also can be the cause of disease. So with these few indications, I just want to show again, you see, how through Revelation, Mrs. Eddy could see that mortal mind is the cause of bodily disease. And how through natural science, medical science has come to the same conclusion today, that really the cause of disease is not just a somatic change, but a psychological condition. Now, let's go on to a third point in our investigation of mortal consciousness. And I come to a very interesting point, which we have to keep in mind very, very clearly when we want to deal with evil and error in our daily life. This is the following, namely that we have to see that we have to deal with individual, collective, and universal beliefs. That moral consciousness is made up not only of individual beliefs, but also of collective beliefs and universal beliefs. Now, what does that mean? You see, we have seen that it is our subjective point of view which determines always the object. We have seen that it is the scale of observation which creates the phenomena. That it is our subjective condition, our own mentality, which creates any phenomena. So you could say, and you hear that very often, especially when we have to deal with patients, that they would come and say, now this and this has happened to me, this and this disease has happened to me, or this and that evil condition has come about, and I have never thought of it. So that would be a proof against this statement that everything is subjective. That if we have never thought of such and such a disease, that therefore we should never get such and such a disease. And yet we know from experience that we get it. And this can only be explained by seeing that consciousness is made up not only of individual beliefs, but also of collective and universal beliefs. What does that mean? You see, it means really that we must see that first of all, I take now the individual beliefs, that first of all we have to be conscious that we do not entertain in our consciousness evil beliefs. Because we know that if we entertain evil beliefs, of whatever nature, that they will have an effect, that they produce their own phenomena. But we should not stay with this. Because you can see so often that somebody who has got into trouble and knows this metaphysical law that mortal mind, mortal consciousness produces its own phenomena, that the patient who has such a disharmonious condition is accusing himself right at once of having missed something, of having been a sinner, of having gone against God, of having entertained a consciousness against God. and begins to accuse himself. And that bears the danger in itself of self-accusation, of self-condemnation, saying, I have done something wrong. Now, we have to see that it isn't the I that has done something wrong, but that it is always moral consciousness. I will come back to it later on. But also, they should see that in most of the cases, it isn't their individual misunderstanding of God that has caused an erroneous condition, but that it is a collective or a universal belief that was operating. So I come to the next point, to the collective beliefs. We must see that we have to deal with beliefs that are shared by more than one person, by me, but that are shared by a great number of people at once. For instance, collective beliefs are epidemics. A whole city, a whole country, or a whole part of the country may believe, oh, there is an epidemic, going on, or going round, what do you say in English? Going on.
Going round,
yes. And hundreds and thousands believe that. So it's a collective belief. It's not just an individual who believes that an epidemic is going round. Or you have national beliefs. You know so well how one nation distinguishes itself from the other nation. Why? Because they have other beliefs. They have other characteristics, and they are not always good characteristics. Much oftener, they are bad ones. And so, being born, say, as a Swiss, I may share through education, through the surrounding, I may share in the characteristic beliefs of being a Swiss. And so with an English, so with an American, so with an Indian, so with an Arab, or whatever it is. He shares the beliefs of the whole nation. Or another belief are racial beliefs. We share the beliefs of a race, of the white race, feeling very superior naturally to any other race, and so we have a superiority complex. Or there are class beliefs. We belong to a certain class, either socially or financially or genealogically or anything like that, and so we share the beliefs that belong to this class. And mostly they are not nice beliefs, they are bad beliefs. Or we share, together with all the other ones who belong to the same religion, religious beliefs. Like the East, they share the belief that they are against the Christ, and that whatever they can do is to go against the Christ. And though the Jews may have their religious beliefs, and they may not always be very, very nice beliefs. We can have family beliefs, because we belong to a certain family, and therefore we may have heretical beliefs. There can be parental beliefs, or there can be world beliefs, the world fears of politics, fears of wars. These fears are shared by millions, not by everybody, but by millions. There can be fears of a certain generation. Every generation shares other beliefs with each other. There was a generation at the beginning of this century which shared the belief in the fear of tuberculosis. Then there is another generation who has fear in another disease. Today it's a generation where most people believe in high blood pressure and so on. And we share these beliefs. We hear them, we talk about them, we read about them, and it sinks in and we share them with a great number of people. So you can see that not every ill and every disharmony that shows itself forth on our body is the effect of our individual belief, of our individual misunderstanding of reality. But they can be just as well a collective belief, a belief that is shared by a majority of people, and therefore dominates the minority of beliefs.